ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय नमः ॐ विष्णुपदाय कृष्णप्रसादाय बुद्धदे श्रीमारे भक्तवदन्त स्वामिनि जिनामने नमस्ते सारस्वतदेव गौरवाणी प्रचारणे निर्विशेष शून्यवारी पाठशाचरेशने श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर सरस्वती गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 रामा राम राम हरे हरे रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भागवत कैंटो 10 चैप्टर 29 वर्स 20 मातरा पितरा पुत्रा भ्रातरा पतयश्च वा विचिन्वन्ति ह्यपासन्तो मा कृद्वं बन्धु सर्वसं Matara, mothers, pitara, fathers, putra, sons, bratara, brothers, pataya, husbands, cha, and va, your, vichinvanti, are searching. He, certainly, apasyanta, not seeing. Ma krudvam, do not create a bandhu for your family members, sadvasam, anxiety. Translation, not finding you at home, your mothers, fathers, sons, brothers, and husbands are certainly searching for you. Don't cause anxiety for your family members. Text 21 and 22. Now you have seen this Vrindavan forest full of flowers and resplendent with the light of the full moon. You have seen the beauty of the trees with their leaves trembling in the gentle breeze coming from the Jamuna. So now go back to the cowherd village. Don't delay. Oh, chaste lady, serve your husbands and give milk to your crying babies and calves. Purport, Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur further explains text 22 as follows. Lord Krishna says, therefore, don't wait a long time before going, but go immediately. The word sati means that the gopis are loyal to their husbands. Therefore, Krishna indicates that the gopis should serve their husbands so the latter can accomplish their religious duties, and that the gopis should also be considered worshipable because of their chastity. All this Krishna says to the gopis who are married. And now to the unmarried girls, he says, the calves are crying, so see to it that they get milk. To the Munichari gopis, he says, your babies are crying, so feed them milk. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur further reveals the hidden meaning of these two verses as follows. In text 21, Krishna might have said, this Vrindavan is the very best of places, and moreover, this is a full moon night. Furthermore, we have the Jamuna on all sides, and there are cool, gentle, fragrant breezes blowing. These are all transcendental opulences that stimulate loving exchanges, and since I am also here as the foremost ecstatic opulence, the object of love, let us now test how much expertise you can show in relishing rasas. In text 22, he means to say, thus, for a long time, for the entire duration of this night, don't leave, but rather stay here and enjoy with me. Don't go serve your husbands and the gentle women, your mothers-in-laws, and so forth. It would not be fitting for you to waste such beauty and youth, which are gifts of the Creator. Nor should you milk the cows or give milk to the calves and babies. What do you, who are so full of ecstatic attraction for me, have to do with these affairs? Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur also explains that the gopis could not really be sure exactly what Krishna was doing, whether he was merely joking, inviting them to stay, or instructing them to return home. Thus, as Krishna spoke about the beauty of the forest, the gopis felt embarrassed and bewildered and looked upward at the trees, and as he spoke about the Jamuna, they looked all around at the river. Their absolute purity and simplicity, along with their absolute devotion to Lord Krishna in the conjugal mood, created the most beautiful pastimes ever exhibited in this universe. Text 23, on the other hand, perhaps you have come here out of your great love for me, which has taken control of your hearts. This is, of course, quite commendable on your part, since all living entities possess natural affection for me. So, in this verse, we find that he directly tells them that you have to stop the anxiety of your relatives and your husbands and mothers and fathers, etc. In other words, he's telling them that they'd better go home. And then in the next two verses, he again says that don't delay. You have to feed the crying babies and the calves, etc. So go back to the village. At the same time, he also praises the forest, full of wonderful flowers and decorated with the moonlight and having nice twigs and leaves on the branches of the trees, etc. On the one hand, he is praising the place and at the same time telling the gopis to return to their homes. So, as was previously discussed, there were different types of gopis there. Some were married and some were unmarried, and some were sadhana siddhas, like the Munijari gopis, those who had been sages previously. He gives directions to these different groups. In other words, those who were married, he tells them to go to the back to their husbands, and those who were unmarried, you go back to your parents or whatever, and brothers. In any case, he's telling them all to return home. But as we see with the previous verses, there's a double meaning again. So ultimately, it is very difficult for the gopis to understand what Krishna really means, because they can also understand that the words could be taken either way, positively or negatively. In this way, it becomes very confusing for the gopis to understand what Krishna is intending them to do. Of course, because they have great attraction for Krishna, they cannot leave him. This causes a further type of problem for them. In any case, he praises this particular place. Previously, he was talking about the ferocious animals in the forest and the darkness of the forest, and you shouldn't be here because it's all dangerous, etc. But here he gives a different type of description. He says it's all beautiful with flowering trees and lit by the moonlight, and it's a nice Jamuna River, etc., and the leaves are trembling in the breeze, etc. So he gives a very attractive description of the forest. So we have two opposite descriptions, the fearful forest with the wild animals in it, and then we have the very attractive forest here. So this further adds some sort of confusion to the gopis. Here, of course, he emphasizes more the duty that the gopis have to their relatives. So he says here, don't cause anxiety to your relatives, etc. Mothers, fathers, sons, brothers, and husbands, because they're looking for you and they can't find you, so you should go home. So this is the major concern, more than the danger of the forest, etc. It's also a difficult situation for the gopis, one of the main difficulties, rather than the, let's say, the darkness of the forest, etc., is the main difficulty is the breaking of the relationships with their various relatives. So, and in doing so, they have to break dharma, the rules of dharma, by not obeying their parents. So there's a relationship between mothers and fathers, or mothers and fathers-in-law, in case they're married gopis. If they're unmarried, be mothers and fathers. In any case, they have a duty to obey the elders. And they can in no way disobey them or make them angry, etc. If they suddenly leave the house without their permission, this is against the normal rules of dharma. And very, very, it'll be criticized by others. So that's one type of relationship. The other, of course, is with the taking care of children. So they have to take care of children. If they have children, they have to feed them and take care of them, and they can't neglect them. That's another duty of the gopis, if they had children. And, if they're married, then they have to take care of their husbands. So it was described that they left all their duties. Some were milking cows, some were cooking and serving their husbands, whatever. So they neglected all of these duties to different persons in favor of Krishna. So this is, in normal cases, to do this is criticized. It's not according to the normal procedures of dharma. So, on the other hand, we do have injunctions of scripture that if there is a choice between dharma and bhakti, one generally chooses bhakti over other things. So instead of doing karma yoga and varnashram duties, one should do practice of bhakti. That's the preference. If one can do both, fine, but if there's some contrary element, then we reject those duties of varnashram and we follow the principles of bhakti and we worship the Lord. So this is a very central principle of the Bhagavatam, that the main duty is bhakti. So then one could defend the gopis on that ground. Well, they're worshipping Krishna, so they can neglect everybody else. That could be used. But we see in normal circumstances that does not take place. Generally there's a little bit of a compromise. So we see that generally the devotees, they follow the varnashram system and they don't deliberately break the rules and neglect everything. If they're going to do that, then they are classed as another type of devotee. That's the Babajis or the Nirapekshas, who completely disregard society and go off to the forest and
chant in a solitary place, etc. So that is permissible if they're qualified for that, but it's a more advanced level. So generally, they do follow rules of Dharma, etc. We see in Lord Chaitanya's movement, most of his devotees were householders, so they didn't just suddenly abandon their houses and go off. We see, of course, the case of Raghunath, that he was repeatedly told to return home. But then finally, when he was qualified, then he left, and he became one of the Goswamis eventually. So permissible in certain circumstances, but generally the devotees would follow the procedures of the Varnashram system and take care of their families, etc. This we have a special case because this is not only neglect, but it's also gopis, women, doing this, which is a little more irregular. Usually the men can run off, but we don't see the women running off. Maybe the case of Mirabai. She ran off? She ran away from her house? Yeah, something like this. Very rare. And they get more criticized. So we don't really have a category for women who renounce their families, etc. But here we find the gopis in this situation where they completely neglect their parents and their husbands and their children and their brothers, etc., and go off to the forest. Very, very unique situation. So therefore, it would be greatly criticized, more than all the other situations. And we don't even see it within the Gaudiya Vaishnava society. It's not so common to see this type of thing happening. We do see Babaji's, etc., but we don't see the women going off like this so much. But here we find the gopis going off with Krishna, suddenly when he plays his flute. So it's quite extraordinary. Nevertheless, as I said, it is supported by the scripture, because ultimately the scripture says that the main interest is Supreme Lord, and that takes priority over everything else. So the gopis are an example of extreme attachment to the Lord, such that it was not that they had any hatred of their family members, etc., but they simply were so attracted to Krishna, they forgot everything else. They couldn't think of anything else because of their attraction for Krishna. So, therefore, they're considered very exalted because of their very strong attraction to the Supreme Lord, where they forgot everything else and they simply wanted to serve Krishna. So, in that sense, they're praiseworthy, though under normal circumstances, as Krishna's pointing out here, not a good thing to do. Shouldn't cause anxiety to your relatives, etc. So that's the normal situation, even for Vaishnavas. They don't want to unnecessarily disturb people. So we find in the nectar devotion, even there, the 20th Anga of Bhakti, 19th, I think, 19th Anga of Bhakti, is don't disturb any living entity. Of course, don't disturb even the plants or animals and human beings. What to speak of your relatives and your parents, etc. We don't want to disturb them in any way. So as much as possible, we try to do that. That's a general principle. At the same time, then it also says that the ultimate duty is to the Supreme Lord. So then sometimes choices have to be made like that. And in this case, they were so attracted, they forgot everything else. So they cannot be criticized at all for their situation. So here, of course, Krishna is reminding them, oh, well, if you forgot, I'm going to tell you. The parents are back there. So this would make them feel, guilty or something like that. Remind them, you do have parents, you have husbands and children, etc. They're worried about you. You shouldn't have them worry. So they have no excuse now for saying, well, we forgot. But then he says, oh, the forest is very beautiful, it's very nice here, and whatever like that. And we saw that this was the initial impetus for Krishna playing his flute. The situation was ideal for the Rasa Leela. So therefore he began playing his flute. So that same description is here, given by Krishna himself, emphasizing the suitability for the Rasa Leela. But at the same time, you go home. So it's a little confusing for the gopis. Huh? So as in the previous statement, there's a negative where he says you shouldn't be here in the forest because it's frightening, etc. But then it can be taken in another way. So he says, don't stay long here. Go back very quickly. Don't delay. You are very chaste women. So you have to serve your husbands, etc. And the children are crying or whatever, the calves or want the milk, etc. So you have to feed them. But here, the negative, don't stay long, is there. So the negative can be taken out of that and put with the other sense. Don't care for your husband. Don't serve your husbands. don't feed the calves, etc. And stay here a long time. Instead of don't stay here a long time, stay here a long time, and don't serve your husbands, and don't stop the children from crying, and don't feed the calves, etc. So then we get a double meaning here again, which is in harmony with the previous statement that talks about the beautiful forest. You should stay here. So you stay here a long time because the forest is so beautiful, with moonlight and flowers and fragrance and cool Jumuna breeze, etc. So again, we have a double meaning here of Krishna. So this shows the cleverness of Krishna in his speech, which is one of the qualities of Krishna, that he's very clever in his speech. So the gopis also are very clever. They're also clever at speaking. They're also very intelligent. So they can also understand the meaning of Krishna in one sense, because they can see there is ambiguous meaning here, saying one thing and then saying another thing simultaneously like this. So this is it's not that they didn't understand this. They could understand this, but it led to some confusion, because they were not quite sure which meaning they should follow. And we see this is not all, some are very clear statements, opposite statements. One time praising the forest, the other time criticizing the forest. So it became a little bit uncertain for them, particularly because this was the first meeting, the first invitation to the Ras Lila. So they were a little bit unsure of what to do in this case. So this, of course, caused them a little anxiety. Ultimately, of course, they overcome that anxiety and they express themselves to Krishna. That's described later on.
Well, it was Krishna playing flute. The flute carries a message. When Krishna plays flute in different occasions, sometimes he calls the cows, but when he played the flute, the gopis could hear the flute. The flute had the meaning, and they could understand the meaning of the, decode the meaning of the flute sound.
Well, they understood, of course, meaning in one sense is a little bit ambiguous because maybe there's no words as such. In other words, we don't hear words in the music itself, but the words convey his intentions. So now there are particular meanings conveyed, for instance, to the cows. He plays his flute and the cows are able to understand that he's calling them. And so just simply by playing his flute, the cows come, or they go in a certain direction, etc. So in that sense, even the animals can pick up some sort of meaning for them, though we say it's not an explicit, words or something like that. And when Krishna plays in the forest with the cowherd boys, and then that's a particular type of playing which encourages them to sing and dance together. So it's encouraging for their sakyarasa. So when he plays the flute in another way, then it stimulates the gopis. Nobody else can hear that, but the gopis can hear that, and it stimulates their love for him. So they get a particular message out of it. There are different messengers. Sometimes the gopis act as messengers, and they carry messages to Krishna or to Radha, etc., back and forth. So that's one type of messenger. And then we have, of course, designated messengers. Certain gopis act as designated messengers. But the flute is also a messenger. So through the flute, Krishna can communicate somehow or other. We don't actually hear the words, but somehow people can pick out his intentions and instructions through the flute, which is natural in the spiritual world. We don't need to say everything verbally with our, you know, voices, etc., in order to be understood. You can, other means are there also for communication. So the flute is very special, of course. It's one of his four special qualities to have the sweet flute. So through that, he invokes different types of rasa and different types of devotees. So in that sense, there's a communication of things.
How did Krishna manage to come out of the house in the middle of the night? You would have some more to...
Oh, Krishna is very easy for him to come out, because it's described how they put him to bed at night, and then he sneaks out the back door. He has a door on his room, and he goes out the back door and then disappears in the night after everybody's sleeping. So it's very easy for him.
Instead of you are explaining about this, like a Sanskrit language, it can give double meaning. Mm-hmm. But Krishna, this conversation taken place in Brajavasi, I think, not this Sanskrit or other language. This conversation taken place in Brajavasi, means Braj language, not the Sanskrit. So how can it give double meaning?
Well, they speak both, I think. That we see in some of the plays that Rupa Goswami has written, some of it is in the dialect, local dialect, and then some is in Sanskrit. So they seem to speak both languages. But even in the local dialect, then you could also use, and some of that also there is joking, etc. So even there you can use words that may have double meaning to them. Or the negative can be placed either way, even if you don't use the Sunday rules, but the negative could be taken in a different, connected with a different verb, etc. And then the meaning of a word could have a double meaning also.
Well, except Sanskrit, you know, all other languages, almost straightforward, not that much complicated. But
But even there, we do have play of meaning on words, which we call puns. So a word has two meanings. So sometimes they use that as well. And we see even that, not just in Sanskrit, but other languages as well. It's like in Sanskrit, atma can mean self, it can mean body as well. It can mean mind, so many things. So you could mean other things. Or Krishna can mean Krishna, it can mean also mean black. So often they talk about the black snake. But that also means Krishna.
Another question, like, you know, you're explaining about the nirapeksha. Nirapeksha means they have to give up everything, they have to go to forest, they have to concentrate completely on Lord. Mm-hmm. Correct? Mm-hmm. So what is the qualification actually to accept one this nirapeksha state?
Well, they have to be fixed in complete detachment. And this is similar to sannyas, but the difference from sannyas is part of the varnashram system. And the nirapeksha, he's not even a sannyasi. He doesn't even follow the rules of sannyas. So he doesn't take a danda, doesn't have orange cloth, etc., etc. It's similar, but without the signs of sannyas itself. So that's what the nirapeksha is.
Can you say that those who are following this Babaji, that follow the Babaji...
Yeah, they're considered to be nirapeksha.
Nirapeksha.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, concentrating on the... Almost you can say this, what do you call this, Siddha Pranali, something like that?
Well, not necessarily. That means you're doing Raghunuga Bhakti. They could be Vairi Bhaktas also doing Nirapeksha. Nirapeksha is simply the state of renunciation, not following the rules and regulation of Varnashram. It doesn't say if you're following Vairi Bhakti or Raghunuga Bhakti. It could be either. Of course, traditionally in Vrindavan, the Babaji's there are following Raghunuga and Siddha Pranali, etc., but it doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, the Babaji could just be following Vairi Bhakti even, whatever. Or it could be in another sampradaya even. Though so I think it's quite rare.
But the main purpose is that, you know, absorption on Lord. That is the main purpose of Nirapeksha, whatever you can say. Even if you say this, sannyasi also. Yeah. That is the main purpose.
Yeah, worshipping the Lord somehow or other.
Yeah.
For the Vaishnavas. Then we have the others who are like Jadabharat or Rishabhadev, who gave up, they weren't sannyasis also, but they gave up everything and they practiced something like Jada Yoga. So they were also completely nirapeksha in that sense. But they weren't, we can say they're Vaishnavas in one sense, but not Gaudiya Vaishnavas. Women? No, not sannyas. One work of Bhaktivinoda says that the women can take something which is like equivalent of being a Babaji, something like that they could do. And so they could be a nirapeksha in one sense also.
Guru Maharaj, we see that the flute is being glorified and so many other natural aspects being glorified. But whereas we find that wind, which is much more active in pleasing Krishna by carrying good aroma and again carrying the aroma for the pleasure of the devotees. But we don't see anywhere the wind has been glorified for...
The what?
Wind.
Wind?
Has not been glorified anywhere, much like the flute has been glorified or anything. Whereas it provides pleasure for Krishna by carrying nice aroma and other things.
Oh, well, no. The wind actually is glorified. Here we see in this verse here, it says, talks about the breeze from the Jamuna. Jamuna Anila. It's not this verse, but the next verse. Jamuna Anila. Lila Ejat. They're quivering with the playful wind of the Jamuna, coming from the Jamuna River. So, and also in the very beginning of the thing there, the description of Vrindavan in the autumn season, I think it described there the breeze from the Jamuna was carrying the fragrance of the flowers, etc., like that. So, and then sometimes it describes how it's carrying the fragrance of sandalwood or whatever, or like this, or Krishna's fragrance, etc., or the from Krishna's garland. The wind is carrying the fragrance of that to the gopis, etc. So, yeah, the wind also is, it's also a stimulus for Madhurya Rasa, the gentle breeze in the autumn season, which is cooling. And sometimes filled with the particles of water from the Jamuna, etc., or the pollen of the lotuses, etc. So it acts as a stimulus for Madhurya Rasa.
Maharaj, Krishna instructing the gopis to obey with Varnashrama Dharma. So was Krishna equally pleased with the gopis who obeyed and who didn't obey? Krishna was instructing to the gopis to obey with the Varnashrama Dharma.
Yeah.
So was Krishna equally pleased with those, equally pleased those who obeyed and who didn't obey?
Well, we find that they all obeyed, they all didn't follow this instruction and they stayed with Krishna. So, and then they had the Raslila, so that was the ultimate pleasure for the Krishna and for the gopis, that they overcame any sense of dharma. And that is also represented in their answer to Krishna. When they answered him, they refused to go back to their house, etc. Is it not? Well, here the instructions are ambiguous, whether they should go or not go. ultimately Krishna wanted them to stay because he called them there with his flute. But then he said these words that sounded as if they were negative, but they could have been positive also. So that created the problem. Huh? And then, of course, they reply to Krishna also, and then Krishna accepts them. So ultimately, they were obeying Krishna ultimately and staying.
Maharaj, Vaidhi Bhakti is beyond Varnashrama? Vaidhi Bhakti is beyond Varnashram Dharma?
Yeah. In the sense that if there's a choice, we follow bhakti rather than the principles of Varnashram. So if Varnashram says you have to worship all the devatas and do sacrifices and do shraddha rites, etc., 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 and then if you have a little time, you can do bhakti. Huh? But then on the other hand, bhakti says, no, first we do all of these things, then if we have a little time, we'll do the other things. So in that sense, it predominates. Not that we outright reject it or anything. We take the favorable elements and we reject the unfavorable elements.